millions of people across the globe marched and demanded real climate action, especially young people. We showed that we are united and that we young people are unstoppable.
We can make this happen by standing together and saying enough is enough. We don't want fossil fuels anymore.
We can all say that the highlight was really the opening with Greta Thunberg, the young Swedish activist, challenging this room full of presidents, prime ministers, ministers of foreign affairs, and saying essentially, you know, you've done this to our generation. Mm. We challenge you to realize the depth of the mistakes that have been made and to work with us. And if you don't work with us, you know, the young generation will never forgive what you've done.
So in a way, holding the older generation responsible for what has been taken place,
yes,
on the planet.
And for not moving fast enough, essentially. And the Secretary General basically said, this is not a climate chat, a climate talk shop. Mm. This is a climate action summit. Mm. And the ticket to enter, the ticket to speak, was not, you know, whether your country is big or important. It was whether your country had something to commit to and whether your country was prepared to actually publicly state that commitment. And we heard presidents of different countries saying, my country will be net zero carbon emissions by 2050. Or a range of other important commitments were announced today. We had the mayor of Montreal in Canada making commitments on behalf of the city of Montreal. We had Mr. Bloomberg, who used to be the mayor, obviously, here in New York. He also made commitments on behalf of the private sector. And, you know, this was really an opportunity for leaders to come and talk about action. And I think the call to act at the beginning from this young Swedish activist was really the highlight for many people.
Mm-hmm. And you are here with some of the members of the Uzbek Parliament.
Yes.
And some of the members of the Mirziyoyev administration.
Yes.
We are going to talk to them too. But I'm just, you know, curious about how you see their role. These people, let's say, come to New York, listen to these big conversations about the global climate, learn from the experience in the cities like Montreal and New York. They go back, and what can they do?
Well, I think this is not a one-day event, we hope. The UN team in Uzbekistan has been working with the administration and with the Oli Majlis in the run-up to this event, and we're really happy that Uzbekistan submitted its international commitments to the United Nations a few weeks ago so that they will be published in the outcome document. Those commitments included one that was already made, which is a commitment to reduce by 10% greenhouse gas emissions under the Paris Convention, but also under the Montreal Protocol to reduce the emission of greenhouse gases by 2020. But there was a range of other new commitments, and I think that's what, you know, the fruit of the engagement, the dialogue we've been having. Some of those commitments include the implementation of renewable energy commitments and targets under the new renewable energy strategy, energy efficient rural housing, which I think is a major challenge for Uzbekistan. Energy efficiency standards have been historically not high, mm-hmm, in public housing, mm-hmm, and getting commitments to really tackle that issue. And UNDP in particular is working with the government to address this as a priority, recognizing it's a major source of carbon emissions in Uzbekistan.
when the Uzbek officials specifically discuss the environmental issues, they usually see that, well, it's a regional issue. This is why I was referring earlier in our conversation to the fact that any kind of an environmental problem is seen as a regional problem. Basically, governments seem to indicate that to solve those issues, we have to basically take a regional effort. It has to be a regional step. What is Uzbekistan in terms of the environmental awareness? To what extent do you think the country knows the real issues that have to do with its agriculture, for example, or just the living standards in terms of clean water? We just talked to this young environmentalist from Khwarazm who is representing Uzbekistan here, and she says water contamination is a big issue. Do you see any progress, I guess, my more, concrete question, in terms of understanding the environmental issues in the country?
Well, I think the fact that one young Uzbek lady won a ticket out of 7,000 applicants, only 100 people won those green tickets to the summit, and the fact that she won it on the basis of her environmental commitment and passion and knowledge shows you that, yes, there is a young generation in Uzbekistan who knows and understands. But I would agree that there is always more one can do. And I have actually had that discussion with the head of the State Committee on Environment, who said, we need to start the education right at preschool about everything from pollution to water usage. When you see people wasting water in a country that's water short, it's always hard to look at. And this, I think, is something that the government does want to invest in more. And there is some way to go. But I think there is a young generation of climate conscious young people out there. We saw that in Hashar Week, which a young lady also worked in mobilizing community engagement in cleanups last year. And I think there's more ambitious plan for this year. In terms of the sub-regional angle, I think... dealing with the climate crisis, as we've seen from the range of stakeholders invited to this conference, it can't just be government policy. It can't be sub-regional commitment. It has to go from the grassroots up and from the global policy down.
Right.
And that's why...
So from every angle.
That's why this kind of forum does matter. Mm-hmm. And I do think it's important that Uzbekistan has a substantive delegation here, because it's also really important to see... Yes, the mayor of big cities are taking climate commitments seriously. Yes, some of the heads of the biggest private sector companies in the world are moving, in fact, faster towards carbon neutrality than governments. And when you come here and you see this global coalition, it also galvanizes you to act. And I think having also, important delegations and discussions led by neighboring countries is also an important opportunity for cross-fertilization at sub-regional level. But obviously there are some aspects like transboundary pollution issues, which are sub-regional by nature.
Mm-hmm. We know that under your guidance and representation, the United Nations agencies have been expanding their activities in Uzbekistan. And in our last year's conversation, you told me that there were 10 UN groups that were involved in fighting the impact from the RLC drying up, right?
Yes,
the RLC group, focus group. Has there been any progress?
Yeah, I mean, the RLC is a tragedy, and I think we're not saying that together with the government, the UN can restore the RLC. We can't. But we can work to bring global good practice, innovation, good technologies to tackle the human impact of the disappearance of the RLC, and also to mitigate the further deterioration of the impact on local people. So we, together with government, we have done a socioeconomic needs assessment which really looked at communities' perspectives. There are 4 million people living in the affected area, and we really wanted to hear from them what the challenges they face related to the RLC situation.
It's like data gathering, basically.
Yes, which is, data in Uzbekistan has traditionally been sometimes difficult.
Absolutely.
And so this socioeconomic needs assessment, which is now, open data, we share it on demand, is a really in-depth overview. And, of course, the people's concerns were jobs, health, clean water. education, access to medicines. Those were the top five. Mm-hmm. And what we're trying to do through our UN joint effort is support the government to tackle those in a community-based and sustainable way. So, for example, mobilizing the community in afforestation efforts will help those efforts to be long-term. You know, getting the community involved in a cooperative, supporting people with understanding how to ensure that the seeds gathering and planting process works over the longer term in a rather salty soil and in a water short area, looking at the latest global technologies, deriving good impact, good assessments from countries that have done this, and channeling those to Uzbekistan, but also working on green economy issues, green jobs. How can we help the people of the affected region to change their skill sets so that they are able to contribute to the economy of their region, despite the loss of the Aral Sea, as it were. And then also looking at the health situation. So we have a very interesting project, very community-driven and community-led project with UNICEF and UNFPA. Also looking at maternal and child health, which was a very big priority for people in the area. And I would say, yes, we have seen very good results. Over the last 6 years of this joint UN engagement in the region, we've seen some significant positive and, what I think is most important, sustained changes in the outcomes and the indicators that we've been measuring related to people's health, people's livelihoods, people's access to clean water. And that is the reason why this multi-partner trust fund, which was launched last year, has, you know, gained the confidence of government, of local government. We have civil society organizations on the steering committee, grassroots mm-hmm. organizations.
And we believe that there are some $8 million there already. Is that right?
That's about right, yes. There's the government of Uzbekistan, the government of Norway, and then about to be a contribution from the European Union.
Mm-hmm. And that money goes to the Uzbek government or to various
projects? No, it goes
projects?
Through the United Nations.
Through
in partnership with government and local communities. Uh-huh. But it's implemented by the United Nations, because the idea being that the government already has an enormous hundreds of millions of dollars state program for the Aral Sea region, I'm sure
right.
you're aware.
Yeah.
They don't need our 8 million,
right.
You know.
So this is really for the...
It's really to bring the global capacity and experience, the innovation, and the focus on results and sustainability. You know, and so we're deliberately coordinating closely with government. In fact, the Deputy Prime Minister co-chairs the steering committee, so that we can help pilot new approaches, which then the government can take to scale through their program. It's all about working in partnership, but also when you have the UN system involved, it means there is some confidence from the donor countries that they can put their resources there and feel comfortable with the accountability level, the transparency, and so forth.
Right. So working in partnership, you regard the Uzbek government as a reliable partner. Obviously, you have been supporting the steps President Mirziyoyev and his administration have been taking. When we talked last year, you said that you know, there is a lot more to do, obviously, and that the United Nations is watching. And for Uzbekistan, you know, being criticized for so long about not meeting its international obligations and having one of the worst human rights records in the world, worst in many ways. Have things improved? Like, when you come to these kind of events here and when you catch up with your other UN colleagues, how do you describe, I guess, the situation, the reform process in Uzbekistan? Are you as hopeful as you were last September when we talked?
You know, I can say to you very clearly that what's happening in Uzbekistan from a UN perspective is transformational change in a positive direction. Mm-hmm. Yes, there's a lot to do, and we see this. The government acknowledges it, and they're working so hard to achieve the priorities that have been set. I think on the human rights front, we've seen breakthroughs that I wouldn't have imagined. The fact that the United Nations Special Rapporteur on the Independence of Judges and Lawyers is in Uzbekistan right now, meeting freely with members of civil society, you know, being taken to visit the court systems, talking to judges, talking to defense lawyers about the independence of the judiciary. That is unthinkable a few years ago. And he will make his free and independent observations. And then a full report will be submitted next year with recommendations. This is a really, really important step. We know that lack of public confidence in the rule of law and in the judiciary is a feature.
Yeah.
And we know that there are steps that need to be taken. Uzbekistan has taken a number of positive steps on strengthening the independence of judges. There is much more to do. And I think having this visit by the UN Special Rapporteur will give an extra momentum to these efforts. But, you know, I don't just take that the human rights area, any area that I look at. There has been remarkable change in the last 2 to 3 years. Mm-hmm. I would say that, you know, some of the changes at the policy level and now needs to be implemented. And that is also in itself a challenge in any transformation of this nature. The capacity to execute the new policies is going to be challenging when so many new policies are happening at the same time.
It seems that the Uzbek government wants to make definite progress, as we hear from President Mirziyoyev, on pretty much every level, on every issue, which is virtually impossible. How should they focus? What should be the main point of attention, like at this given time?
Well, last year, together with the World Bank, the UN team did an analysis on exactly that issue. Where are the greatest fruits?
Challenges.
The greatest fruits to be to ensure the sustainability of the wider reform process, but more importantly, from a UN perspective, to ensure that Uzbekistan's national sustainable development targets are met. Because if you think about the range of sustainable development goals, you know, it is everything.
Yeah, I mean,
like
fighting poverty, gender equality,
infrastructure, climate change,
basically all the fundamental issues,
health, education, you name it. So we did an analysis, you know, given these are the targets that have been adopted, given the action strategy for development, which is very closely aligned to the global SDGs, where are the pain points where strong investment would have most significant cascading positive results? Yeah? And there were three outcomes. The first is really on the governance rule of law side. A strong emphasis on the need to build capacity in the civil service, public administration reform, and rule of law. The second cluster of issues was human capital, that a strong investment in a really good, robust, coherent social protection system and health and education capacities would pay great dividends towards the long-term achievement of reducing inequality, ensuring decent jobs, and so forth. And then the third cluster of issues was environment and climate change. Natural resources in Uzbekistan are under great pressure. And a strong focus on that, in our view, is also going to have longer-term cascading positive impacts on the drive to create jobs, the drive to you know, create a flourishing economy with minimal inequalities, which is what the Agenda 2030 is all about. So those are the three areas that we advised to focus on, and the UN system has really tried to focus our efforts in supporting those areas in particular.
Mm-hmm. How many UN agencies are working in Uzbekistan now?
12
of them.
Yes.
Is the refugee agency coming back?
The UN, well, 12. There are 12 agencies present in Uzbekistan. Mm. There are other agencies that cooperate from outside. So in January this year, UNHCR, the refugee agency, re-engaged, and that was great. There was a period when they were less able to engage, and that, under the new administration, has changed. So they've re-engaged on two issues. There are 12 remaining refugees in Uzbekistan from a long time ago. Used to be a much higher figure, gradually reduced as people have found long-term sustainable solutions with UNHCR support or via the government. But the issue that UNHCR, the refugee agency, really wants to cooperate on is statelessness. In many Central Asian countries, there was a legacy of people caught after the Soviet Union.
They have no passports.
Indeed. And so there is a goal to reduce to zero the number of stateless people in Central Asia. And, you know, Uzbekistan is making positive progress. Uzbekistan has something to be proud of in terms of its birth registrations, very good on ensuring every child born is registered. And it has reduced by several thousand the number of stateless people, according to the data that we've seen.
So, thank you for being so patient and having this wonderful conversation with me. I have one more question.
Okay.
So when I wrote earlier on my one of my social media pages about the fact that we here will be covering this UN General Assembly session opening and then everything else that's going on that that has something to do with Uzbekistan and with Central Asia, you know, people are very cynical when it comes to the United Nations and they immediately, you know, express their views. So I had some comments from our fans who say, you know, UN is practically just like our governments are. You know, they promise, they say the big things, and they, you know, they promise too much to the humanity, but they don't necessarily deliver. And they, you know, they question the credibility of such big mechanisms. What do you say to them? I mean, as a representative of the United Nations, what would you say, I guess, from this spot, you know, where the UN headquarters are, where this big organization has been housed since 1952, if I'm not mistaken, and 74 times they have come together, right, the General Assembly, to discuss things, to obviously also one of the things that UN General Assembly does here is to discuss its own budget, the organization's budget, right? And 193 countries are the members of this, and Uzbekistan has been a member since 1992.
Yeah.
So one could look at it as a historic process, evolution in itself, but at the same time, you have a lot of Uzbeks and Central Asians, I would say, who say, so what?
When I hear cynical feedback about the UN, you know, the first thing that comes to me is my children. You know, the reason that our children are healthy is because around the world, the UN has worked through ministries of health to raise the standards of child, you know, health, and reduce child mortality, reduce maternal mortality. And if you look at, you know, vaccinations, a small issue, that has saved millions and millions of lives around the world. And without the global policy coordination, without the global standard setting that the World Health Organization brings, we wouldn't have the global coherence. And of course, epidemics are no borders. So this is exactly, you know, the kind of issue that the UN excels at. The same goes for food and agricultural standards, for food security. The same goes for environment standards. The kind of discussion we're having here today, the kind of commitments that were announced at presidential level to bring countries to carbon neutrality would never have happened without the convening power of the United Nations. So I believe that the UN was not going to save the world, but it's going to help governments and citizens of the world to make good choices about how to ensure a more prosperous, a more dignified life for the citizens of the planet. A life where there is greater chance of peace, a greater chance of having your rights upheld, and a greater chance to achieve prosperity.
Thank you so much. And congratulations, by the way. Best wishes on the award that you recently got from the Uzbek government. How did you feel about it when you were informed about it?
Oh, well, I was obviously very surprised and extremely honored. You know, it's really, to my mind, it's a recognition for the whole UN team working in Uzbekistan. That, you know, the work we do on a day-to-day basis is meaningful, and that the UN as an institution has the respect of the government, and that, of course, is something that it means very, very important for us working day in, day out for what we believe in. And, of course, you know, I respect that some people feel differently about the UN, but I believe in what the UN does, and I think it was a great honor to be awarded like that.
Thank you so much again. Good luck.
Thank you.